From the KCPW Danker Studios at Library Square, this is Downtown SLC, a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. I'm your host, Jason Mathis. The library is a constantly evolving community asset, a real amenity for the people of Salt Lake City. Over the past few decades, the library's role in society has changed dramatically, and now the Salt Lake City Downtown Library is considering the possibility of a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week presence. Joining me today will be John Spears, Executive Director of the Salt Lake City Public Library System, and Andrew Shaw, the Communications Manager for the library. We'll be talking about the changing role of libraries in our community and the possibility of a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week learning community gathering place at the downtown branch. All of that after this news from the BBC. Welcome back. You are listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. Joining me today, my good friends, John Spears, who's the Executive Director of the Salt Lake City Public Library System, and Andrew Shaw, who's a Communications Manager with the library. Fellas, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
It's a really, I think, important topic and something that's very relevant. Conversations about the emerging role of libraries in our society and some interesting proposals and initiatives that the Downtown Library is considering. I want to preface this by saying that the Downtown Alliance has a great relationship with the library and that we have been vocally supportive of this conversation about a 24/7 library and what that might look like for a variety of reasons that we're going to get into today. But just as a little disclaimer, I'm not completely unbiased on this, and listeners of this show will know I'm rarely unbiased on any of the topics that we're talking about. But John, maybe we could start with you. What is kind of the role of libraries as you look out 5, 10, 15 years into the future?
Well, in some ways you could say that the role of the library is exactly what it's always been, but how the library is going to go about creating and enacting services based around that has changed dramatically. And libraries exist for a lot of reasons. One is just a place of retention. It's a place that people can come to get information, to get resources, to get books.
That's kind of their traditional role, right? I mean, going back to the Library of Alexandria in Egypt, that's where people put information, collected information, gathered information. That's what people have traditionally always thought of as libraries.
That's how people definitely think of them. It's interesting that you bring up the Library at Alexandria because its original intention, and if we get a little too esoteric here, I apologize, its original intention was actually a place of discussion, a place where those ideas could actually be discussed and new ideas could be created, and which is a great segue into kind of the expanding part of a library's role today, and that is as a place of creation. Mm-hmm. It's not just a place, it's not just a warehouse, for instance.
Right.
It's a place of creation. And what our role is now more and more is to give people the tools to do that creation, whether it's artistic creation, whether it's literary creation, whether it's the creation of bonds that we need as a community. Mm-hmm. That's something that is becoming very important, and that ties into our role as a community space. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily define how people use the library. We give them a facility, a staff, expertise, mm-hmm. and then the services to allow them to make of it what they will.
Right. So it's conceptually, you know, and you think about sort of maybe the role of the internet in condensing information, compiling information, that sort of that component of what a library maybe has done in the past is done in different ways. And so really the library now is this community gathering place and a place of creation, as you say, of conversation, of building relationships between people and ideas.
Yeah, and the internet is a perfect metaphor. Mm-hmm. I mean, because when the internet first came about, it was kind of one way. People went there in order to get information.
Right.
And then as the internet has matured, it's become a place where people can exchange information.
Yeah.
And then finally, it's kind of grown into a place where people can create information. I mean, even Facebook, a post that you do on Facebook, that's creation. That is getting something that you believe in out for the public to see.
Even if it's videos of baby kittens.
Especially if it's videos of baby kittens.
But you know, I think videos of baby kittens are an important part of what it is to be in society today.
Yeah.
And making sure that everybody has equal access to the things that affect our world. And, you know, we say videos of baby kittens and it's kind of silly, but if there is a video or if there's something, a piece of pop culture that really is part of what the fabric of our community is, making sure that everybody has access to that so we all can be participating in those conversations together, I think is a really important role of the library. So when I go through the library and I see people on YouTube or on Facebook, I think that's really important. I think it's important that, you know, that I see a video from YouTube at night right before I go to bed. But for people who don't have that access in their home, I think it's great that the library makes it possible for them to have that same viewing experience. And I can have a conversation with that person and say, you know, did you see the last minute buzzer beater from the highlights on that game last night? And, you know, yeah, we all can, because we all can get that access together.
It seems to be really sort of about the democratization of information and sharing concepts and sharing. I mean, you guys do this all the time as professional librarians and professional library staff, but it's really about bringing people together for those shared experiences, right?
Yeah, it definitely is. I think, you know, the internet, it's almost made it easier to talk to someone in Azerbaijan than to talk to someone across the street.
Yeah.
You know, I'll use an example of an event that we had last year, which was a debate on federal land usage. Mm-hmm. And we had quite a few residents in the city that had definite opinions on control of federal lands. And then we had, you know, ranchers from areas outside of the valley. The library was a place that brought them together. Mm-hmm. And what emerged from that was an incredible conversation where they finally heard each other.
Yeah.
You need a space that allows that to happen. Mm-hmm. It's very easy nowadays to be balkanized in terms of what your views are and to live in a space, whether it's a virtual or a physical space, where those views are constantly reaffirmed, mm-hmm. sometimes to the exclusion of actually hearing other views. That has always been one of the roles of the library, is to provide information. And that information now comes not just from, you know, books that have been vetted by the experts mm-hmm. or the internet, but from actual interactions. And we hope that the library will become a place where those conversations at the community level and the individual level can happen more and more.
I'll tell you, I had a personal experience. There was a exhibit talking about the Holocaust and specifically about Anne Frank. And I happened to walk through it in, I think, 2009, 2010, but it was just in the main urban room. And I happened to walk through it on Cinco de Mayo, and you'd go, well, where's the connection there? But there was a lot of conversations in our community at the time about immigration. And I immediately saw this correlation between sort of a systematic hostility towards a specific group of people that was really interesting to me. And but for the library, I wouldn't have made that sort of connection that ended up being very influential in my life in a lot of other ways. Mm-hmm. So the library, for me personally, and I get to walk through it three or four times a week because I'm coming to record this show often, and my mm-hmm. office is on the other side. But I have a great relationship on a personal level with the library. I see the impact that it's had for me personally and for my family and for the larger community.
Yeah, that's so great to hear. I mean, we stories like that happen at all of our libraries. You know, we have seven locations, and it's great that people come in and they get to encounter things that I like that unexpected encounter. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the most important things that libraries provide. And being able to encounter something that makes your life better or makes you think about things in a different way. Like, we have opera singers who sing, and we call them serendipitous performances. We don't advertise them. Mm-hmm. You just might show up someday walking through the urban room, and there's, you know, a soprano from the Utah Opera. Kind of makes you see the world a different way. And yeah, that's a great way that libraries influence anybody who comes through them.
Yeah. Yeah, people talk about the library's collections, whether it's physical or virtual, and it's really becoming more and more the connections. Mm-hmm. You know, the library isn't just there to talk to the community and tell it things, it's there to listen as well, mm-hmm. and then to be a vehicle for passing that information on to the rest of the community.
Well, and let's just make a point, too, about this sort of physical space, particularly the downtown library. I mean, I think lots of great libraries across the valley, some city libraries, some county libraries are great, but mm-hmm. maybe I'm biased because I do like downtown a lot, but the downtown library is really a spectacular building, probably one of the architectural gems of the entire state, I would say. I think that's not a stretch to say that.
No, I would agree.
And having a beautiful space like that, something that is aspirational, that's exciting, that people can get their heads around and feel a sense of ownership, that's a positive thing. It's great that people have a sense of connection, excitement, enthusiasm about the public library, and the architecture, I think, lends itself to that.
Well, the architecture was built with such intention. I mean, every piece of it means something. You know, mm-hmm. the transparency of the building is very much about the transparency of information. The curvature of the building echoes the curvature of the mountains mm-hmm. around us. And yeah, it's great to walk into a building and see how all of the community pooled its resources and was able to create this amazing piece of architecture. I also love how it has influenced the rest of the architecture in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
You know, it raised the bar. It made sure that other architecture here, like we're going to be a great architecture city. And so, you know, the public safety building probably wouldn't look the way that it looks if it wasn't for the library.
Yeah.
And I really value that.
That's true. Yeah,
and that architecture has actually been taken on into the new buildings that we've built. For mm-hmm. instance, the first building that we opened since the main library was Glendale. And that building is a very different model than the rest of our branches. Mm-hmm. It is a completely open floor plan. You can literally stand on almost any point in the branch and see every other point. And that design was intended to engender that community spirit of people are there together, regardless of what they're using the library for, they're there as a community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I've driven past on Third West to see the new Marmalade Library, which is going to be really cool. That's a great project.
Yeah, it's going to be a beautiful building as well.
Yeah. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the evolving role of libraries. We're also going to be talking about a new concept for a 24/7 library and how that fits into the way that libraries are continuing to evolve. We will be back after these messages. We are back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. Joining me today, my friends, John Spears, who is the Executive Director of the Salt Lake City Public Library System, and Andrew Shaw, who is the Communications Manager for the library as well. Gentlemen, thanks again for being here. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. We've talked a little bit about the evolving role of libraries, and there's been a community conversation over the past 6 months or so about an extension of hours, an extension of the way that we might think about the library in terms of it becoming a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week resource for the larger community. John, could you maybe talk a little bit about that proposal? And I will, again, I feel that I need to mention that some of the original thought behind this came from a conversation that I had with a couple of other guys, Bill Evans and Bruce Bastian, thinking about elements of our community who may need to play a safe place to be at night. We came to you with this idea, and you greatly expanded it, greatly improved upon it, and said we can be a great resource for the entire community. So maybe if you can just share sort of your thinking about what that might look like if we were to have a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week library.
You know, on one hand, I think for a lot of people, it's a kind of earth-shattering concept to think of the public library as being open 24 hours a day, or
yeah.
I guess an easier way would saying, of saying it would be the public library would never close.
Right.
But the reality is it's really not an earth-shattering idea. It's just an opportunity that the public library has to take the resources that we have
mm-hmm.
and what we offer the community and make it available to everyone. This is really designed from our perspective to be 24-hour service for everyone, to
yeah.
make the public library available to everyone regardless of what their schedule might be, regardless of when it might be most convenient for them to use the library. This is going to make it readily available no matter what.
Yeah. Well, and there are many businesses that have chosen to be open for their customers 24 hours a day. And so in some ways that seems to be something that our society is evolving to. People have an expectation in a lot of ways, maybe because of the internet that we talked about a little bit in the first segment. You want access to things when you want them, the moment that you want them, and that's sort of an expectation that we have. You've done a little bit of research to see if people would use the library later into the evening, and you've got some information about what that might look like.
Yeah, we worked with the University of Utah to actually do a survey of the public regarding their feelings towards 24/7. Would they use it? How might they use it? When would they use it? And one of the things that we discovered was, you know, 47% of survey respondents said that they would use the library at some point between 9 p.m. and 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty substantial number of people when you look at the population of Salt Lake City.
And was that surprising to you? Did you feel like it would be that high? Nearly, you know, half the population said, yeah, I might use it sometime between 9 and 9.
You know, it really wasn't a surprise to us. If you've been at the main library at 9 p.m. on certain nights, there's no question that there are people who don't want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking from my own experience, I'm a night owl. If I was not the, you know, the director of the library. I'm there after 9 p.m. many nights. But I know from my own experience that there's been many times that I would use the library both as an information resource, as a gathering place, as a place for Wi-Fi, any of the normal things that we do during the day. We're hoping to carry them over into the nighttime hours to just finally make them available for everyone who's paying for them.
And you guys do have really amazing programming, often with partners that come and use the library, use the auditorium or use some of the meeting rooms or, you know, use the large urban room. So there are a lot of community entities who are actually benefiting from the library as it exists now and who may have cause to use it on a much larger basis if it was open later into the evening.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like one of the, you know, the most obvious uses of the library after hours or, you know, in these late hours would be a midnight movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Utah Film Center uses the library almost every single Tuesday night to show films, and they do great programming. And if they were able to expand it, or if we could also show additional films in the later hours, I'm sure people would love to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think I would be interested in that, definitely.
Yeah, the survey did show us also that people are interested in taking classes, in attending programs, you know, not just movies, but this is an opportunity, for instance, for people to, you know, take a GED class, take a computer class, any number of the classes that we traditionally offer during the daytime. And this isn't something that the library is going to go it alone.
Right.
You know, we would partner like we do now with a multitude of agencies across the valley.
Yeah, it really does, I think, though, in some ways expand the universe to have those later hours available, because there's some kind of programming that makes a lot more sense later into the evening. One question that has come up, homeless people frequently come to the library just like everybody else. It's as we said, it's open to everyone in the community. How are you thinking about that? How are you managing that? And I will say this, too, that I think, John, under your leadership, you've been here for a couple of years now. The library has been very thoughtful and aggressive, I think, in some ways, in helping to think through policies of having homeless patrons in the library. You've done an amazing job, I think, in making it feel welcoming and comfortable for everyone. If you haven't been to the library in the past few years, people should come down and check it out. But it is a question that libraries across the country struggle with, or at least think about, and you've, I think, been very thoughtful in your approach to that particular population segment.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. We've made a lot of changes at the library, but you know, I would be remiss if I didn't credit a lot of my predecessors with this as well.
Sure.
This started long before I got here, and it's something that I think this library can take a huge amount of pride in. And it really gets down to the fact that we view homelessness as a situation, not necessarily as a demographic characteristic. And there are children that use the library, there are teens that use the library, there are you know, the Spanish speakers who use the library, and each of them entails, you know, specific services that might be of benefit to them. They might use the library a little bit differently. Members of the homeless community, there's services that they need as well. And we've partnered with the Volunteers of America, for instance. We have three caseworkers at the library during our current hours that connect them to the resources, much in the same way that we work with the school district to connect students to the resources that they need, that we work with Centro Civico and other agencies to connect the Hispanic community to some of the resources that they need. The homeless community is just one more constituency that we serve, and I think that that has been a shift in attitude. And it started, like I said, with the staff long before I got there. But I do think it's picked up speed in recent years with some of the additional programs we've done, such as Project Uplift. But those programs aren't designed necessarily to cater to one group at the exclusion of another. They're designed to provide services to a group that is utilizing the library already, much in the same way that we provide children's story times, that we provide Spanish language story times, that we provide programs for the business community. We provide programs for the homeless community as well.
And I will say, too, it's been interesting as this idea has moved forward in the community. There have been some concerns, and I think you're really being very thoughtful in your approach to make sure that you're being thoughtful about those concerns and answering questions. but also a lot of support, a lot of people in the community. And it almost seems to me to sometimes break down on age, that younger people are really excited about this prospect, and older people might have some more reservations and think about libraries' traditional hours as more concrete. Mm-hmm. Thoughts about that?
Well, I think with the age, you know, one thing that the survey showed us, definitely age correlated very heavily with support for the initiative. Mm-hmm. And you can see a very much a downward slope with 18 and under being hugely supportive of this, and then, you know, 65 and older being the group that's the least supportive. I believe 35 was kind of the breaking point. Mm-hmm. I'm 41. I support it, but that's okay.
I plan to stop supporting it next year. Okay.
Now we know everyone's ages here.
Right. I'm 44, and I support it.
Oh, there we go. Okay. But I don't necessarily think I don't find that unexpected. And one of the reasons for that is, and this is anecdotal, but it's been my experience that people very much associate libraries with their childhood. Mm-hmm. People associate libraries with what they remember the library was like when they were growing up. Mm-hmm. And that 18 and under group, and even like the 24 and under, has seen the change in libraries. It's no longer a place where, you know, if you speak above a whisper, you're going to get shh
right.
from, you know, someone with horn-rimmed glasses and a bun in their hair.
Or you have to go down and look for microfilm because you're doing a school report, and like you have to find a Time magazine from 10 years ago, yeah. and that's yeah. the only place to go to find it. I mean, it's different. It's just the libraries used differently now.
Libraries are used differently. And, you know, what our hope is that we want the library to be available for everyone. Mm-hmm. And we want, like you said, I would invite anyone to come to the library to see what it is now, because while it might not be the library that you grew up with, it is an incredibly vibrant space. Mm-hmm. That for some may be too boisterous, maybe too loud, maybe too crowded. But if you can look past that and see what is happening there, people coming together, people still getting out of it what everyone has always gotten out of a library, learning, mm-hmm. a sense of community, a sense of involvement, a sense of being a part of. If you come and get that, then we've succeeded in our mission.
Yeah.
And going 24 hours is going to be a way that we can offer that to so many more people than we can now, and offer it to people in a way that's never been done before.
Yeah. Well, John, I really appreciate your time and your leadership. Andrew, thanks always for your great communication support in setting this up. I should mention that Andrew actually composed the theme music for the Downtown SLC show. So if you're a regular listener, you have him to thank for putting that together.
Well, thank you.
Gentlemen, thanks a lot for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. Join us every Thursday at 10 a.m., where we explore the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center.